He covers the Chiefs.
With that, time's yours.
And you're in that place where you're in the playoffs.
He covers the Royals.
Flair, over there in the middle, on the left.
Salvador, just take us through your emotions.
He covers college sports.
But one great thing about the conference tournament, where I think it gives teams hope.
And every now and then, he likes a good laugh.
Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh?
He's Blair Kirchhoff of the Kansas City Star on the program.
Welcome back here to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. I am live in Surprise, Arizona, spring training home of the Kansas City Royals. One more time, one more show, one more program, one more half of a program to go here in Surprise, Arizona. I'll remind you, Dayton Moore coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. So that is coming up next hour. But a chance now to talk to a guy who will trade places with me as Blair Kirchhoff headed to the Valley of the Sun for the Kansas City Star. We bring him onto our sprint guest line right now, usually in person, but Blair, for what is, what, maybe two or three times a year, let me say, welcome to the sprint guest line.
That's right. It's an odd place in here, the guest line. I'm looking around. It's well decorated, well done, Curtis.
Thank you.
It's happy to be here.
Yes. We've done it different locales around Surprise, Arizona. This time our paths don't meet as we'll crisscross, making the journey. So the sprint guest line is always a great alternative to turn to. What, a week without Blair is just a week I don't want to live in. I'll tell you.
That's
we had a vote. Jed wasn't really that keen on it, but I said no. We're going to talk to Blair Kirchhoff this week. I don't care how we do it. Get the sprint guest line ready. And so here we sit, my friend.
That's so Jed. That is so Jed.
I would bring him into the conversation, but he's outside smoking. So we'll let him finish up his heater, and we'll see what he has to add later on here in this conversation. But Curtis always at the ready, so we'll see his thoughts. Curtis, you were pro going ahead and talking to Blair this week, right? You were Team Blair, weren't you?
I'm always Team Blair.
Yeah. Okay. Just want to make sure.
Well, with this team, we cannot lose.
That's right. All right. A lot to get to today. I've got a lot on my list here, Blair. But let's start with last night's K-State Wildcats. The Cats just barreling now towards their worst season in 20 years. Is the way I saw one of the headlines. 69-62. They lose to K-State, but what ends up taking center stage, and I don't want to make too much out of this because I do think it is just a little bit of a heat of the moment, but I do think something has to be made of it because it's something that you now watch the relationship between Bruce Weber and Cartier Jada. He misses a dunk, rebounds long. They go from being tied to down five as Moretti knocks down a three going the other way. And listen, kids being kids, but juniors aren't supposed to make that kind of mistake. Is it, K-State's saying all the right things. Cartier Jada's Instagram, he said all the right things. You know, the passion and the heat, and I love Coach Weber, and we all just want to win and all that. But is there maybe more to it than that?
Well, it came after the jawing of or mocking or whatever Cartier Jada did to in the direction of Bruce Weber during the timeout. So I was wondering if, when he got the breakaway, was that another kind of a statement that Jada was making to Weber? You know, like, yeah, I could go in and lay this up and get the automatic 2 points, but I'm going to do it my way. And of course, his way turned out to be a failure with the missed dunk turning into the three. And you're right, the potential game that's tied becomes a 5-point game. And really, the change is Kansas State doesn't get close enough to put itself in a position to win down the stretch. So, no, even though Weber said the right things after the game, and I'm looking at Jada's Instagram to see, exactly what he said, and one of the things that struck me was, hey, there's a reason why I've got Ema tattooed on my, an Ema tattoo. But and he did apologize, not apologize, but try to explain himself to, what he was saying and what he meant. It's a bad look. And And it's been a tough year for Jada. You know, it's Fran Fraschilla got after him a little bit earlier this year, and he hasn't played up to expectations. They need him to be, a leader type, and he hasn't been that. He's, you know, he hasn't started every game. There's a reason for that. So I think that when the book is closed on this Kansas State season, we're going to look at, you know, what reasons why things went bad, and one of them is because Jada didn't play up to the level that that we thought he could based on what we've seen the last couple of years.
So one of the things, you know, we've talked about is to not just study the sports figures, Bruce Weber, Cartier Jada, but study the media around it, because you can learn some things. The one thing I always you know, point to as an example, if anyone's never heard me say that, as I point to when Joe Posnanski was writing for the Kansas City Star. If Joe Posnanski wrote in the Star that it's time for somebody to be replaced, it's time to fire a coach, a GM, what have you, he was already gone. Joe wouldn't write it till he had the information that he was gone, and within 48 hours, that individual would be fired. Because I think Joe was smart, he wasn't going to burn a bridge, you know, saying someone should be fired if it was someone that he perhaps he could use as a source or have a relationship with. It was just good, smart journalism, and as Joe always did. So I think, you know, in this case, what jumps out at me. So my point to that was, I knew if Joe said a guy was out, he was out. There was no reason to sit and argue that Joe's wrong and they shouldn't fire him, because Joe already knows the guy's fired. And so in this case, what's the great soundbite we have of Bruce Weber after the KU game, where he goes, ask Fran what he thinks. Remember that?
Yeah, that was
all right. So
previous year,
ask Fran Fraschilla about it. Yeah, I can't, and I don't even remember what it was. If it was, for some reason, I think it had something to do with the Svi Mykhailiuk 17 step trip to the basket. But I can't remember if it was that game or if it was about. I think it was about fouls, but it was around that time, whether it was that year or that game or what have you. But my point is this: Bruce needs to do a better job of covering his tracks. All right, Bruce's guy is Fran. Anything Fran says about K-State came from Bruce. I figured that out, and I'm not that bright, all right? When Fran Fraschilla is talking about earlier that Cartier Jada needs to focus more on this team now and less on his pro career, that's what Bruce Weber thinks is going on with Cartier Jada. And maybe those kids haven't figured it out, but I have, that he uses Fran Fraschilla to get messages across in the media. Now, lots of people do it. Blair, you and I bet we would both agree, have been used by people in sports for messages that they wanted to send within their organization, but it needed to come from somewhere else, right? I know for a fact I have been, yeah. And by the way, I think it's good reporting, you know, if they want that message out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's what's going on.
And we're willing to tell the story. That's for
yes.
Sure.
Absolutely. And so my point is not that Fran is doing a bad job. Fran is doing a really good job. He's cultivated a relationship with Bruce Weber, and he's getting true, honest information out there. And so I think if you're a basketball fan watching Fran Fraschilla, you know he's wired in. And he's definitely wired into Bruce Weber. But Weber needs to do a better job of covering his tracks. And, like if you're Cartier Jada and Fran Fraschilla is saying that, he knows, I'll bet you, Bruce Weber has had a confrontation with John and said, listen, focus on this team, quit worrying about where you're going to play pro ball, and get to work. And then Fran Fraschilla says it, and everyone comes to Cartier Jada and says, you know, Fran Fraschilla in the game last night said, you know, you need to be focusing on this game. Well, and you know what he does? He turns around and goes, oh, it's all in here, coach, right? It's just us. It's just these guys in here. It's us against the world, and you and Fran. Right? Like that's the one thing that I think jumps out at me in this situation that has a potential to be a lasting problem.
You know, I think the idea of sending the message through the media is one that it's like you said, it's happened. It will continue to happen. But if this is the way that this message got out through Fran in a conversation with Bruce, you know, sometimes Fran will be at the Friday practice before the Saturday game or whatever the day before practice is, and he'll have honest conversations with coaches, and sometimes that's where, you know, the information gets passed. And if Fran doesn't do this, I suspect he does. You'll have an honest conversation with the coach, and coach will say something kind of revealing, and he'll say, "Well, can I use that? You know, is that something I can use on the air? Either the game that I'm calling or sometime later." I think that happens quite often as well, and it not just with Fran, but with other television analysts, and that's how some of this information gets out. It's not the first time this year that Fran has created a bit of news with his comments. I think it was Oklahoma earlier this year. No, it was Texas. Texas that he called out for being a soft team back in maybe the middle part of the conference season. And again, I wouldn't be shocked if that came from Texas coaches. That just happens. But in terms of getting that information, when Fran says it, I think Fran's earned a level of respect in the Big 12 footprint that when he says something like that, it's just like, wow, really? I mean, that's kind of surprising. It's coming from him. But in this case, in this particular case, I think with Cartier Jada, if it unfolded the way that we suspect it might have, what may not have been taken into account is how the player would react to that kind of news, and what sort of makeup that player has. And maybe if you've got somebody who's a little overly sensitive or won't handle criticism well, then that is the fault of the coach. That's a miscalculation on the coach's part, and you've got to you have to understand or read the situation a little bit better. It makes perfect sense that a coach in sort of somewhat of a desperate move wanted to light a fire under one of his best players, and it doesn't seem to have worked. And
right.
and the season is spiraling, and there's just it's beyond saving now.
Yeah, there's no number one draft pick. Like, you're not moving up to draft a better player when you bottom out on a college basketball season. We're talking to Blair Kirkhoff here in the program. And listen, I said this to Todd Lebo. I said, and maybe this is why I'm not a college basketball coach, because if somebody did that to me, if I were Bruce Weber, he would never play for my team again. Like, at least not anytime soon. I mean, maybe I'd have something, but I wouldn't suspend him. I wouldn't kick him off the team. I just wouldn't put his name in the lineup, and I wouldn't call his name to go in the game. And he'd sit down on the bench. And, I do think that you got to be careful. Again, I don't want to make too big a thing out of this, but it's a thing. It is a thing. It's not my doing. I didn't go clap back at Bruce Weber and make a demonstrative statement in front of everybody on television as to the fact that I'm showing up my coach. And I think it does speak to that, and we know Marcus Foster, Bruce Weber really kind of lost Marcus Foster. And he ended up transferring up to Creighton and finished up having a very good career up there. Jada's only a junior. But I think it's clear John is not going to be back, right?
I go back again. I say that because the clapping and the mouthing came before the dunk, that was the message. Whatever was said during that timeout, and John didn't go back into the game at that point. He stayed on the bench, and he was in the game, and then did the hand clapping. And it was because he took a shot instead of switching, I think. I think that was the situation. And Bruce was mad at him because of that. And Jada, I think, was mouthing, I can make that shot. So the fact that he didn't go back into the game at that point, and then when he did go back in, had the windmill dunk attempt, that was the action speak louder than words moment for Kansas State. And just a bad look.
He's not going to be Jacob Pullen next year, but this is a team that needs more pieces, not less.
Right.
So, look, and maybe that's what this season is, and maybe we all knew it'd be a step back, but it's also a season where he's going to have to flush the system, and he's going to have to look to go get some even more players. I think this kind of it just shows that and maybe as simple as losing sucks. and nobody expected it to be this bad, and it's gotten this bad, and so now they're just kind of coming apart at the seam. Or it could be that Bruce Weber's got a bad mix again. We know he's done that before. And it could be happening again. And but it might be bigger than just, oh, we had some frustrations.
I do like the freshmen on his team, and you hear good things about the recruiting class. And he's coming off of a Big 12 championship year. So I'm not saying that this is an aberration. There are reasons why this season has turned into what it's become. And maybe some of it is miscalculation. I'm sure a lot of it's miscalculation on Bruce's part about what he had and what he needed. But I think some of it also is the idea, and I don't know how much you can blame the coach on this, the idea that players like, you know, Xavier Sneed and Markel Maween and Cartier Jada just weren't the strong enough leader types to pull a team, you know, to a level of success that we've kind of come to expect at K-State. And sometimes that happens. It just does. But I absolutely did not expect a first to worst season for the Wildcats.
No, I didn't either. And we knew it would be a step back. But we also, you know, while his name got written down 9th or 10th in the league, we've talked about it. Every time he gets picked 9th or 10th, he usually finishes better than that.
Yeah.
And this is a year that he's not finishing better than that. They're living up to what the expectation was for this team. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about the Kansas Jayhawks and Baylor Bears as it is a showdown. Somebody is, you know, virtually almost confirm a number one seed in the NCAA tournament with a win on Saturday. We'll talk about that next. Blair Kirkhoff is with us from the Kansas City Star. He's brought to you by our friends at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. They're at I-35 in Santa Fe. You can find them online at robertbrogdon.com.
The Program with Soren Petro.
His dream is to crush your dream. His contribution is to destroy your contribution.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back. You're on the Program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you in Surprise, Arizona. Blair Kirkhoff, such a great guy. Of course, he's brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC at I-35 in Santa Fe. Find him online at robertbrogdon.com. Great selection of new and used vehicles. Make sure you check them out online. You can see all the vehicles. Great selection. The number one Buick dealer in the country. The number one volume GM dealer in the metro. That's Robert Brogdon Buick GMC at I-35 in Santa Fe. Blair Kirkhoff, such a swell guy. He didn't even bother to correct me when I had him going to the wrong place. I assumed you were coming to Arizona, but you're not. So people should not look for a Blair Kirkhoff byline on the Royals or no, but maybe, you know, wherever you're going, you're going to write about the Royals from there. I don't know, Blair. I don't.
No, this is going to be a couple of days just getting away.
There you go. Well, richly deserved, I might add. Richly deserved.
Well, I'm taking all my stuff with me, so I'll be writing. But at least it won't be from the office.
Ah, well, you know, good. Get the hell out of there. I think it's best. I think that's best. Let's talk about the Jayhawks. Very impressive in their last performance as they, seem to be, as Bill Self teams always do, getting better and better and better and better and rolling. Iowa State 91-71, the score kind of inconsequential. Iowa State, a team that's on fumes as Halliburton went down. They've lost any chance they had of making something really of their season, at least by Iowa State standards. But it's the way they shot the ball. Now, I'm not asking for Dotson to knock down, what was it, 5 of 6 or 6 of 8 or something, I think, in the game.
Yeah.
I know at one point he was 5 of 5, and then I think he went 1 for 3 to finish. I'm not saying he's going to shoot like that all the time, but they are getting better shooting performances, and that was kind of the one thing that everybody was looking at, saying this team can't shoot, therefore we can cross them off the list of teams that can win the national championship. Are they putting their name back on the list now?
Yeah, absolutely. These last two games, Oklahoma and Iowa State, the Saturday and the Monday night game, really, really good shooting. I mean, Marcus Garrett going 6 for 9 on threes against Oklahoma, and then Dotson having his game. And what we were saying before those games, Isaiah Moss had been the only Jayhawk who'd been knocking down threes in the past couple of weeks. And I think we both reached the conclusion that you cannot go far in the tournament if you're down to one guy, only basically one guy hoping, you know, to make threes on your team. And they've proved over the last couple of games that given open looks, and listen, consider the opponent, Oklahoma and Iowa State are, I would say, two of the bottom half of the Big 12 teams when it comes to defense, and they do like to push the pace. And I think that puts players like Dotson and Marcus Garrett in positions of they find themselves open more than they would otherwise. Certainly than they are going to find themselves on Saturday at Baylor. But it's an offensive minded game these last couple of games. And it's funny when Bill Self, usually when he's mad anyway, but when he got mad these last two games, you could tell it was because there was a little bit of a defensive breakdown. That won't happen on Saturday. There will not be a defensive breakdown on either side when it comes to KU and Baylor. They're two of the best defensive teams statistically in the country. So I think it's and what about this? I mean, number one is playing host to number three. There aren't Final Four games like that. I mean, that's how high level this game on Saturday should be. Two of the top three teams in the nation playing. You're lucky if you get a matchup like that in the Final Four. So I'm really looking forward to watching it. And I really the fact that Kansas has been playing better the last few weeks is of note. I thought before the last couple of weeks that Baylor had started to level off, but watching them against Oklahoma on Tuesday night and the way they dismantled West Virginia last week, I don't think there's any leveling off of Baylor. That's just a terrific team, and on the way to becoming, if they beat Kansas on Saturday, on the way to becoming, having the best record of any team in Big 12 history, including any of Bill Self's or Roy Williams' KU teams. So, a lot of interest in the game in Waco, and I think it's a one possession type of game. I really do. First of all, it's going to be low scoring because this is the way these teams play, and I think they're very evenly matched.
I think, I really thought OU was going to get them. And I thought
I did too.
Yeah, that's the spot that teams usually trip up when they're trying to hold off Kansas. Kansas, we looked at it a number of times. The last 4 or 5 years of the streak was always like, okay, where were they at this time? And there were times coming down the stretch where they weren't in first place. And whoever they were chasing would spit the bit, and Kansas would have a head-to-head game where they would take care of business head-to-head, and they're going to get a chance to do that on Saturday and pull even with Baylor. But I thought OU, and they were getting 4 points. I think it ended up even being 3.5, maybe at game time. That this was the game. Lon Kruger'd come out firing. They'd have enough offense. They'd have a day. They'd have a night. Baylor'd have a look ahead. And they'd go down. But I think that win over OU is giant. Doesn't mean that they're going to beat Kansas necessarily, but it does speak to how good they are. And any time you can erase the Jayhawks off of a basketball record in the Big 12, you're doing something. And they're 23 consecutive wins. That's what it is now, right, in the league?
Yep. Yeah, 23.
That erases Kansas's record. I mean, how many times do you think, let's go to the record book of the Big 12 and see how Baylor owns one of the records? That's just not something you would expect. And it's we've talked about it a lot, how good a coach Drew is, that he continues to win at a program that it's not easy to win at. And even with all their success, they still struggle at times. There are lots of games. If it's not one of the biggest games of the year, they don't sell out that building. Yet he has a program that's fighting for a national championship this year.
Well, and think about how he's evolved. We're used to seeing, or at least when I think of Baylor and Scott Drew historically, I think of young big guys. Perry Jones, Isaiah Austin. Remember, although he wasn't young, Rico Gathers, but just sort of building their strength through these teams that look great in the airport and but could play too. I mean, they were good big men and guys that got drafted and. And then on the, that's how they would try to attack the basket. And then on the defensive side, Syracuse and Baylor were the only two teams that were playing zone as often as they were. And so what is this Baylor team about? It's an experienced team. Eight players have redshirted either because of a transfer or they just, agreed to sit out a year while after being recruited by Baylor. It's not a team that has top 50 recruits, and it's guard oriented, not big man oriented, and they're playing man defense. They don't play zone anymore. So I give Scott Drew all the credit in the world for changing his stripes. Some coaches would never do that, and Scott Drew just decided to, change his approach, in recruiting. I think that, it wasn't working for him going after guys that were, that Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, others were trying to recruit, and he's identified talent, and he has put that fits his system, and he's put together a team that is just, when you watch these guys play, like you and I both did on Tuesday night against Oklahoma, holding that Oklahoma team to 50, an offensive-minded team to 54 points in its home building, and with every expectation of Oklahoma making that a good game, I was at the KU Oklahoma game on Saturday and watched Christian Doolittle just tear up Kansas because it's a big matchup problem for the Jayhawks. You got a big guy that can step outside and shoot. And I thought, okay, well, Doolittle in his home building could have a big game against Baylor. They shut him down because he's not a matchup problem for Baylor, and there just aren't any matchup problems when Baylor plays a team. They've got somebody to for everybody, and I think Scott Drew is going to be the national coach of the year no matter what happens on Saturday, and I think he'll deserve it. It's been quite a season for him. Like I said, on his way to heaven. The greatest season in Big 12 history, if they can finish the job, if they can win the Big 12 with a 17-1 or 18-0 record, maybe come to the tournament and win. He's never done that. Baylor's never won the tournament, and then get a Final Four appearance because that also hasn't happened under Scott Drew. He's been to the Elite Eight a couple of times, but he's never pushed through to the Final Four. So, and it sets up well for him. They got the regional final in Houston this year, so that place could be full of green and gold if they get that far. No, it's they're for real. They're a terrific team, and they've been doing it the last couple of games without Maceo Teague, one of their better players, I out with a wrist injury. I think he's going to play on Saturday. Now that's why. And again, Kansas is playing great. Baylor hasn't not played great all year. It's going to be a terrific game.
I think, one of the things I take away from this, and you mentioned it, and it's something Gary Parrish has talked about as well, how, he's kind of remade his team, how Scott Drew has remade what he does at Baylor. And he said, we kind of see this with really good coaches, that they come out and when they're young, they recruit, and it's about getting as many big guns as you can, and you go get them, he said. And then you kind of get there and you're like, God, I got this guy, but he doesn't really do what I want him to do, but I had to go get him because I have to get the best players. And you start to figure out exactly how you want to play and who you are as a coach and what works. And so you kind of, there's a kid that maybe you can get in on and maybe you can get him, but you're like, hey, he doesn't really do what I want to do. And so you go over here and you get this other kid. And so you don't rank as high in the recruiting, but you consistently have better basketball teams. And he pointed to Bob Huggins and, different guys that, used to chase the All-Americans and get the All-Americans, but now really get like a second tier of guys, but they get a lot of them. And then they all play the way they want them to play. And he pointed to Drew kind of making that adjustment. And I think it is, and you mentioned more of a guard-oriented team. He can always get one of those Texas big men. There's probably some Baptist kid, in Texas, and he could go use the Baylor, pitch behind him, and he could go get that kid. And you're right, they'd be there, but maybe it junked up what he really wanted to do offensively or how he wanted to play defensively. And I think we can maybe see that with Bill Self as well. Right? Because this team, now listen, he's still, and I think they'll be back up there getting all Americans as soon as the FBI and NCAA stuff is over. But I think it might almost be part of the reason why Kentucky hasn't won a championship, right? They get all these guys, but do they really fit what it is John Calipari wants to do. He literally will take whatever, you know, the 10 best guys are over 2 years, and you know, no matter what they play, how they play, what they want to do, he'll throw them out there, and then he kind of tries to work it out. And this year's no different. He's amazing at it. He's now that team's coming together, and Kentucky's a team you don't want to play in the NCAA tournament. Those kids are growing up. They're getting experience. They're learning how to play. But I think Bill Self, you know, Christian Brown, to me, was a kid that doesn't fit the Kansas recruiting profile. And I know what people say, well, you know, there were rumblings, so he had a scholarship because he couldn't go get somebody else. But that's not true. He signed him early, yeah, really early. And he could have kept chasing other guys. To me, it was almost like he said, I've got to get some more shooting. And this kid will come and love Kansas and be here for 4 years, and he will give me a wing presence that can knock down shots, and he went out and he grabbed the kid. And I even think Garrett, too. Garrett was a guy that was like, I don't know, 100 in the country, 95. Still a great recruit, right? But not yep. up there at the top. And he's and what he was he looked at him, and I remember him talking about him, that he's a combo guard. He can really play either. Tremendous defender, going to be one of our best defenders when he gets here. He perfectly described him, never mentioned shooting, which was good because he doesn't usually shoot the ball well. But he clearly wanted that combo guard to have another ball handler on the team. And I think he's almost kind of remaking, and it's going to be interesting to see how he recruits when the cloud is lifted off Kansas, and assuming he stays at Kansas. Is he recruiting now all out to a four out, one in, and going to play this style of basketball and embrace it? And are we watching him evolve maybe away from chasing all the McDonald's All-Americans and more so targeting a certain type of player to play a certain type of way?
That's an interesting observation. And Ochai is another one who you can put into
yes.
that category.
Yes.
You know, I think when we talk about coaches making adjustments or evolving, it is absolutely true that Bill Self has done that this year, and not just the recruiting, just on the floor with, you know, he just seemed he really wanted to play the two bigs. He wanted to play McCormick and Ezebuki together because nobody else in the country does that. Nobody has those two guys, those twin tower sort of guys. And he wanted to be, you know, he wanted to think that was the advantage Kansas had, and I'm gonna give credit where credit's due. Jesse Newell pointed this out to me earlier this week that the fight that Kansas and Kansas State had at the end of their game, what was it, about 3 weeks ago, a month ago or so,
right.
whenever that was, basically changed the way Kansas plays because that McCormick was the. You know, Silvio D'Souza was the one that lost the rest of the season, but McCormick was in the middle of that as well and had to sit a couple of games. So Bill Self had no choice but to go small after that. And if you look at the, you know, just trace back, Kansas was playing well at the time anyway, but I think they've played at even a different level with the four out with McCormick, having to adjust to playing without McCormick. And it has really served Kansas well. And it's actually served McCormick well, too. When he comes off the bench, he's made the other subtle change of starting, you know, Isaiah Moss. But when McCormick comes off the bench, he kind of gives him the jolt of energy. And, you know, can score from 15, can score at the basket, can score with his left or right. And he just doesn't, you know, just never seemed to work out well with him and Doak playing together. Not the way that I think Bill envisioned it. So I think that's just a, you know, just another example of how good these coaches are, that they're willing to make moves during the season to help a team. And for someone like Bill, this team was already pointed toward a successful season. You know, when we talk about Scott Drew, that was creating carving out an approach during the off season. With, you know, with Jared Butler, with Maceo Teague, with Mark Vile, with what you have, Bill did it at midstream. You know, he had to make an adjustment in middle of the season, and it has, I think it's really paid off for him. And if they do go down there and beat Baylor on Saturday, it'll be heck one of the better victories that he's had at Kansas, as many as he's had, as many times as he's beaten You know, he's beaten number one ranked teams there. He's gone on the road. And the win at West Virginia a couple weeks ago was a terrific win. He called it one of the better wins that he's had on the road since he's been at KU. But I think if he goes down and wins this game, a top-ranked Baylor team, that this will stand as one of his really one of his all-time best. And it'll be a tribute to just an in-season adjustment that is really seeming to pay off for Kansas.
I think if he wants to play the two bigs, he needs to go out and recruit, you know, more bigs, right? I mean, if that's what he wants, and maybe it's, yes, you get a guy who's, you know, top 20 and is going to be two and done, but also, you know, get a guy who's 88, you know, or you know, the Perry Ellis is, and who is the kid from Oregon, Lucas?
Landon Lucas, you know,
Yeah, he needs to make sure he's got one of those on the roster all the time. But I don't know where he wants to go. I know this. I mean, stunning. Here we sit going, Bill Self can coach basketball. These are the type of hard hitting revelations you get when Blair Kirkhoff comes and joins the program. We get these kind of conclusions to you that you're not going to get anywhere else. Not anywhere
else. Well, I pride myself in bringing it out of you, too. You know, just reaching deep into your soul and pulling out the deep, dark truth. Chief had a good season, though.
That's right. Yes, iron sharpens iron is what we've got going on here, Blair, with you and I getting to the bottom of these things. We'll take a break one more with Blair Kirkhoff here in the program. Dayton Moore coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The program with Soren Petro.
Thanks, Coach.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back here to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you in Surprise, Arizona. Blair Kirkhoff with us, brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC at I-35 in Santa Fe. He is on our Sprint guest line. Blair, the Missouri Tigers, nice win against Ole Miss. That in and of itself is there's no reason to like get super excited, but it's when it comes after beating Auburn. They don't let down. And theoretically, kind of a rivalry game, whatever we would call Arkansas now, for Missouri. On the other side of it, they handle business against Ole Miss. And quiet as it's kept, have won 3 out of 4 and played well in the one that they lost and lost on the road to a good LSU team. Is it all coming together now for Konzo Martin?
As much as it can, I think, with this team. It's coming at a good time. You know, we can compare Missouri and Kansas State right now and say, which one would you rather be? And it's falling apart in Manhattan, but coming together in Columbia, it's great to see. And they have played well. And now you watch a Missouri game with an expectation of the ball going in the basket or, you know, this something good might happen. At least just, I know it's just a couple of weeks worth of victories, and there have been, you know, this in conference play, there have been some dreadful losses, but maybe they've at least, you know, put a stiff arm to the dreadful loss, and you feel like they can compete in every game. They and then I got to think how many Missouri fans thought that the Ole Miss Tyree, was that his name, the three-point attempt at the end when Drew Smith fell down. That could have tied the game. How many people thought that was going in and it clanked off the back iron in the final second? So
all of us thought that. Every single one of us thought that's going down.
All of the every.
Every of the fan.
That's right. So it's a trick question. There is no percentage. It's everyone. But it didn't. And how about that? In fact, Missouri did everything right at the end of that game. They made all the free throws. I think they hit 2 or 3 from the field, and the one that they missed was a good look by Pinkett. And I'm watching a Missouri team that I'm not used to seeing this year. When they play an evenly matched opponent, and Ole Miss came into the game with the same conference record, but Missouri held serve at home and did the right things at the end of the game. And you know, not so coincidentally, Xavier Pinson has just been fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And we started seven or eight games this year. And we're talking about adjustments coaches and teams make, and that's what bigger one has been made around here than increasing Pinson's playing time and having him, lead this Missouri team? 60 points in two games? Are you kidding me? But a little bit of the shine off of that Auburn win after Auburn goes to Georgia last night and lays an egg. But, hey, still take it. Take it and run.
Yeah, listen, and they've got a schedule that has Missouri fans excited because at Arkansas, they're looking down at the standings at Arkansas. At Vanderbilt, they look down at Vanderbilt. A good 8-5 Mississippi State team, but it's in Columbia. At Ole Miss, they're only one spot in front of them. And then versus Alabama, a team that Ole Miss is one spot below them. Alabama is the team that's one spot in front of them, but still a losing record in conference. I mean, there are Missouri fans that are dreaming of an undefeated run here, finishing off every one of those.
Well, yes. When you look, they won't be favored in all of them, I wouldn't think. I doubt they'll be favored at Arkansas. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think they'll be favored on the road. But, why not dream a little bit? Why
sure.
not? Last year was such – 2 years ago they were in the tournament because that was the quarter season, and last year was dreadful. But, that's what winning – that's what, when things go right – and Smith playing so well. How about Reed Nico playing as well as he is? Everybody, you can point to anybody on this Missouri team that's getting minutes right now and saying, yeah, he's doing this. He's contributing. He's playing great D. He's knocking in shots. He's setting up his teammates. That's just stuff that you weren't seeing earlier this year with Missouri. So. If it's too little, too late, it might be for postseason play, and I don't know. I don't think they're going to go 5-0 down the stretch, but it's not impossible. And it starts with a road. It starts with a road game on a Saturday at Arkansas. These are good times for Missouri basketball. Are we at the beginning of good times the rest of the season, or is it just? Just live in the moment with Mizzou.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, postseason basketball, what are the qualifications for making the NIT? Is it a winning – it's not a winning record or a 500 record in league. It's just a 500 record overall, right?
Yeah, well, that's right. And there is a committee. There's a separate committee that meets when – I think they meet in New York. And so they wait until the bracket comes out, and then they have their quick meeting. And they picked the field. And there have been years where I thought a team from the Power Five that had, that was maybe, 18-14 or something like that would get in and didn't get in over a 24-4 team from a low major
right.
or something. So, but there is, somewhere out there, there's NIT bracketology as well that someone can find. But any postseason would be welcome for Missouri.
Agreed. Blair, great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Time for our Deli Fresh End of the Hour question. Sponsored by Good Sense. Chosen by KC Sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense. Not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, Justin Verlander is 37 today. Second overall pick in the 2004 amateur draft. Who was the first pick? Brought to you by Good Sense.